Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Hello,
welcome to Hoovering. We've got a brilliant episode here. I've got another podcaster on. She's called Nikki Drew. She has a podcast called Macabre London, which is like gory, murdery, historical London murder history podcast. So we're going to be talking about sort of creepy, horrible, historical foodie eating things. Before we get into that, just my usual thanks for listening. A special thanks, by the way, if you're my patron. They're people who swap money from tiny to big for prizes to do with the podcast, like discount tickets to live shows and guest recipes and stuff like that. If you're interested in becoming one of those people, go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. Talking of live shows, we've got some belters coming up. As you listen to this, I'll be making my way to the Macunliffe Comedy Festival to do a preview and a live Hoovering. Both sold out. Amazing, amazing. And we're also at the end of May coming to the Wells Comedy Festival on the 26th. Got some brilliant guests for that. And on the 9th of June, we're the Underbelly South Bank Festival in London, obviously, with Sarah Pascoe, Tom Allen and Liam Charles from Liam Bakes and Bake Off. That's going to be an absolute whopper. That is a huge venue. If you're anywhere near London, come to that, please. And the last thing I need to beg you to do is there's this thing called the British Podcast Awards, and they're having a Listener's Choice Award, which the public can vote for, which ultimately to me means, like, well, the people who have got 8 billion, squazillion, quadrillion listeners are going to win that, aren't they? But maybe they won't. Maybe they won't. Maybe it'll be me with my just healthy and gorgeous, select, perfect amount of listeners. But I mean, it could be more. Do tell people about the podcast. Anyway, please vote for Hoovering in the Listener's Choice Award. Go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Takes a minute or two, and I'd be very grateful if you'd do that. Okay, should we have a podcast? This one is juicy. There's moments where it is not for the squeamish. There's quite a lot of sort of chat about zoos. I don't know if ever have we recorded one of these that's got more sort of twists and turns for the unexpected and bits that made me go, oh! So, bloody hell, enjoy it.
Oh, God, well, we've got some exciting stuff to try here. Yeah. I suppose we start with my conventional things.
Yeah, so what's this?
So there's a cafe in Ladywell where I live that's just changed hands. And it's called Oscars, and it's become quite trendy now. It's very nice, and they've done it all up inside, and it's all swanky, and it's all like high stalls and no Wi-Fi. There's obviously like they want grown ups. You can tell they want grown ups. They want sort of food and coffee at poshos that know their stuff.
Yeah.
It's not sort of bring your children kind of vibe.
And they don't want people sitting in there all day on their laptops.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like they want, this is cold, hard business. You want to sip your coffee, eat your cake, get the fuck out of town. And I got a fair bit of respect for that.
Oh, that's someone right.
Who is one of their... I think if when my baby was tiny, I wanted everyone to let me bring him everywhere.
Yeah.
And now I think, yeah, fine. I think it's great that there's loads of places where you're not going to have that around you. And actually, do you get this? It's quite good sometimes when there's no Wi-Fi because you get the writing side of things done a lot more quicker.
Yeah, and you can do it easy peasy. Mind you, for me, because a lot of it is research-based,
No, you really need it. There's certain jobs. If I'm writing on a... like punching a script up or whatever and a bunch of it's research, you fuck then. But if you actually just need to like revise a script or whatever. Anyway, Oscars, thank you for your cakes. They gave me a discount as well, which is kind.
Oh, nice.
So we've got, this is called a marzipan spring cake,
nice.
A raspberry brownie, and then a straight up brownie. And it's all vegan apart from the straight up brownie. So I just thought it'd be interesting to do some comparisons.
Oh, nice.
So help yourself to a bit of whatever you fancy.
Thanks very much. That's lovely.
I'm going to try a bit of this. I like, there's some really pretty flowers they've done on the edge of the marzipan cake.
I'm quite a fan of flowers in cooking. I don't think they're used enough.
Yeah.
Because I've brought something with me as well, which is my lavender shortbread.
Oh, you made some lavender shortbread.
Yes, I made it, but I've made it vegan.
Oh, it's like, thank
I've never
you.
Made it vegan before.
Oh, thanks. Oh, they're beautiful. They're so gorgeous. Oh, I love it. Right, let me get a picture of them.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
They don't look that pretty. Oh, they're kind of so slightly cute. Fallen apart. They're kind of more oily than I was expecting them to be.
Thank you. Right, I'm trying that first.
They've kind of got a little bit of a sort of, don't know, like, I found it quite a heavy taste to begin with, and then the shortbread comes through.
Oh, God, that's so nice.
I'll give you the recipe for it, if you like.
Oh, really nice.
Really easy to make as well.
Hey.
Yeah, that's why I love making shortbread, because it's so, so easy.
I've never had vegan shortbread before. It's lush.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's just coconut oil.
I thought it really needed the bloody butter, do you know what I mean? But it doesn't. That is gorgeous.
No, it's coconut oil. So that, and then...
Have you toasted the lavender or something? It looks...
Yeah, so it's
yummy.
Just kind of a little bit sort of fragrant.
Only the tiniest bit of lavender involved.
Yeah, because otherwise it tastes a bit too kind of like Nana's cupboard.
No, a little bit. I always think of, I don't know why, I always think of my Nana's, she used to have these amazing like knitted toilet roll doilies. Like a knitted cover for a toilet roll that had, it was like a knitted, it would be pink or blue or whatever, so woolen. And then at the top of it would be like a little lady. As if the actual toilet roll cover was her frock. But what's fascinating about that is, why would you cover a toilet roll as if, like, oh, the idea of toilet rolls is disgusting. That needs covering. But you've covered it in a way where it looks like a woman's consumed it with her vagina and bum.
It is really weird, isn't it?
And got it underneath her dress.
Yeah, really
her
strange.
Enormous dress.
And sometimes you can find them where they're, like, padded around the edges as well. So they're like even bigger.
So
it's like, what is that all about? Like, what exactly are you trying to hide?
What on earth is going on for people?
But yeah, when you've got to take the Barbie out of the loo roll.
Yeah.
It is really strange, isn't it?
What is going
on? Yeah, what is that all about?
All that stuff from a bygone era, like them trays you used to get over your bath. I'd like them to come back.
Yeah. I was talking to my other half about this because I was like, snacks in the bath is one of my favourite things ever.
Is it?
Yeah.
Big fan of a bath snack.
Yep.
Apart from a glass of wine, what's your favourite bath snack?
I would say usually a cheese and cracker.
Nice.
Little
Although
bit of
crazy crumbly.
Yeah.
But
it's all right because you can kind of like, I don't know, usually I take a little plate in and we've got a little shelf by our bath. So I just put it on there along with my phone with my YouTube videos on it.
Brilliant.
And then sit and watch that. And then, cheese and crackers.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. It is, like, if I've got a day off, bath in the afternoon, the cheese and crackers, that's the best thing ever.
Wine, cheese and crackers, and that's the most with Nell and I thing I've ever heard.
We have a mirror at the end of our bath as well.
Filth! I love it. Absolute muck. So you can watch yourself sipping your wine and eating your cheese.
Well, it was the one that, when we moved into our place, it was owned by this, it was an old writer guy. And he just didn't have a TV or anything, just literally walls and walls and walls of books. And so when we moved in, everything was kind of, hadn't been updated since the 90s.
Right.
And so he had this screwed in mirror onto the wall, just like basic one. And so when we moved in, we ripped everything out and started again.
Yeah.
But we kept that mirror and it just kind of sat by the end of the bath and then it's just stayed there forever.
Perfect. That's what always happens, isn't it? Yeah, something exactly. Just ends up somewhere. You stop seeing it after a while, don't you? You stop knowing it's there.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going in for a bit of Oscar's almond fruitcake.
Nice. This brownie is incredible. It tastes a little bit like Smarties and I don't know
why.
Oh
my God, does it?
Got a little bit of a Smarties kind of chocolate.
They seem particularly proud of that. In fact, their enthusiasm in there. It's gorgeous. Like, it's really... They're so, like, high about their stuff.
Well, that's good,
though. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Mmm.
Okay,
that
tried...
almond thing is fucking lovely.
Ooh.
I'm really into almonds at the moment.
Yeah, I'm never really a big almond fan.
Aren't you? Is almonds something to do with the type of poison? Is there a type of poison that smells of almonds?
Oh, I don't know.
Beware the smell of bitter almonds. The detective knows what many might find surprising, that the deadly poison cyanide is naturally present in bitter almonds and many other plants used as food, including apples, peaches, apricots, lima beans, barley, sorghum. Yeah, everyone's always eating a bit
that.
Of sorghum.
Yeah.
Flaxseed and bamboo shoots. Oh, I did wonder. Oh, because sometimes you do
get a really bitter almond, don't you?
Yeah.
We accidentally eaten cyanide.
Yes, cyanide is sometimes best described as having a bitter almond smell. But it does not always give off an odour. We're talking about murderous things because Nikki isn't like a bit of an expert in deadly foods.
I would say I'm sort of a kind of a rubbernecker more than anything else.
Hobby historian, I think, is a...
Yeah.
Because you still had to do a ton of research.
Yeah.
Oh, my fucking God, that normal brownie is sick.
It's so good, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
It's got layers upon layers.
Okay, Oscars, thank you for my discount. I think that might be the best brownie I've ever had. Like, it's up there with the best brownies I've ever had.
Mm.
The crispy top, and then it's like fudge inside, right?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, it's like super dense. It's like almost kind of, it's like a cakey Nutella.
Yes!
But it's like, I don't know, it's denser than Nutella would be.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fudgy, as you said.
Mm.
But yeah, it's good.
It's that crispy roof. And then I don't want to try the other one straight away because I'm enjoying the bits that are stuck around my teeth.
I've got
teeth.
Little bits of raspberry that are stuck in my teeth. It's
Have
lovely.
You?
Picking the bits out.
Tell me about any murders that have happened by eating.
Quite a few in London.
Mm. Because people feed people poison, you think.
Mm.
I wondered whether... like, anyone's ever been bludgeoned to death with a food like a rock hard stale loaf.
I think sometimes with some of my cooking, you could probably do that. But.
Oh, I've been there. I mean, I made some squash gnocchi once that went so wrong. I think you could have clogged a throat.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you could have choked an adult with it. It was so dry and gloopy and rocky.
Yeah, sometimes you have like pizza crusts as well, don't you, that are so solid that scratch when they go down and then you can feel them burning as you swallow. Ugh, that's horrible, that is.
No thanks. Yeah, tell me about some food murders.
So there's been a few different ones. I looked into one that was all about arsenic poisoning, because arsenic poisoning was big in the Victorian era.
Was it? Everyone was banging into it.
Everyone was banging into it. So it was called the inheritor's poison. Inheritor's powder, I should say. Because you can't taste it. You can't smell it. It's completely undetectable. So once you put it in something, then that's it. You can eat it and it doesn't have any distinct features. Once you've been poisoned.
So an autopsy at the time might not turn it up, basically.
No, because they didn't really do autopsies back then. So autopsies kind of... Yeah, they kind of only really came about sort of...
I believe everything I see on the telly, you know.
So they did do, like, they did, just didn't have the knowledge. They could cut you open and say, right, okay, that was clearly a ruptured spleen or something. They could see the physical effects, but actually anything poison-wise, they wouldn't have anything to detect it, so they wouldn't know. And so this one case where somebody was, it was a whole family that ended up being poisoned. Because it was a jealous, you'll have to listen to the episode because I can't remember it completely, but it was basically a jealous cousin, grandchild, basically wanted somebody else's money, grandfather's money, so decided to poison him whilst using the coffee grounds, and then they used to reuse the coffee grounds for the rest of the household, so he would get the first batch because he's head honcho, so he gets
the in the same coffee. Way that like at that time the dad would have a first go in the bath and then they'd all have his mucky slops
exactly so
water
so it would work like that,
so they all got slightly less poisoned
less poisoned,
until the youngest child is smaller and smaller bodies, so it didn't matter, they all died anyway.
So there was all the staff survived just about. But he died and his wife died.
Fuck.
And so they didn't know why it happened. They assumed it was just like a case of dysentery or something because the symptoms are very similar to that. So,
you shit yourself to death?
Yeah, basically. So, yeah, vomiting and, lots and lots of shitting.
Oh, my God.
And so it was very easy to pass it off as somebody had just suddenly come down ill.
Right.
So that's how they used to do it. And, so that one was the first case of them actually being able to develop a test to work out arsenic poisoning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it happened down in Woolwich. So
not far from where we are. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so they, basically developed this test, and then they still use this particular test today to find out if anybody's been poisoned by arsenic.
Do you know what the test is?
I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but... Yeah, it's in that episode.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like I should make it clear at this point that Nikki's got a podcast called Macabre London that you probably already listened to, but if you don't, tuck in. It's like really lovely, detailed talk-throughs of, famous murders.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I feel like I'm getting a proper history lesson off them, but with all the thrills of... a murder podcast about
because that's the thing as well, it's like I'm more interested in the story side of things, so for me it's like I really like history, but I find sometimes that things are a bit heavy going and I'm a bit like I don't want to listen to a whole kind of, you know, I won't name drop any other podcasts, but, but like ones where they're like 3-4 hours long, I'm like,
oh no, I don't know why anyone's doing that. We can slag all of them off as a blanket thing.
So these are a cure-all, I would say.
Are they?
Yeah, because they've got the dark chocolate and the ginger in them. So
I knew ginger had medicinal qualities for getting rid of, like, what do they do, colds?
Colds, it's an anti-inflammatory.
Oh, great, get your swollen bunion down.
It's a natural antibiotic as well.
What?
Yeah, so it's got all sorts of different bits and bobs in it that
they
are good
found
for
a
you.
New antibiotic, didn't they, recently, in mud?
Oh, really?
Yeah, very promising, considering we're all becoming immune to the ones we've had for a while.
Oh, that's crazy.
So why is dark chocolate a cure-all?
Because dark chocolate...
Because it tastes a bit like medicine?
You're not a fan.
I love it. I absolutely love it. There's a brilliant comedian called Josh Widdicombe, who years and years and years and years ago now, he had a whole bit about how it tastes like paracetamol, and it was very funny, but I'm not really doing it justice. But I can see why people don't like it, basically, because...
Yeah.
Compared to milk chocolate.
Well, it's not dairy milk.
It's a bit more grown up. I bloody love a bit of dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah,
chocolate,
I love
though.
It too. Particularly with ginger as well. It's a really nice kind of like mix with it. And I don't know whether those have got like the crystallised ginger in it, but crystallised ginger is like one of my favourite things
looks
in the world.
Oh, look how pretty they are. They're round.
Oh, they are. I thought they were going to be square for some reason.
Me too, because we've been after-aided into thinking that all chocolates are the same shape.
These
are beautiful. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I love ginger and I love dark chocolate.
Well, there you go.
And I'm trying to think if I can think of an ailment I've got floating around that this we could see if it cures all of it.
Well, dark chocolate is a natural sunscreen.
What?
So is it? Apparently it boosts, there's something in your skin, I can't remember what it's called, but there's a certain element in your skin that if you eat enough dark chocolate, it boosts basically your natural protection of your skin, which is...
Well, I'm going to Lanzarote in a few weeks, so I'll make sure to take some dark chocolate ginger thins.
Oh, here we are, I've written it down. So natural sunscreen due to flavanols, which increase your skin's natural sun protection. So there you go. But they are antioxidant and they lower your blood pressure as well.
These are lovely. And then, there's no visible ginger involved.
Oh, okay.
Maybe but you it's can kind of really minty. Taste it.
Yeah.
I think they probably used ground ginger.
Oh, maybe.
I feel like ginger's something that grows all right here, doesn't it?
I don't know. I've never really tried to grow much stuff.
Well, we've really got like, lots of stuff. I was going to ask you as well whether you think, in like Victorian times... I think eating generally would have been a really sad affair.
Yeah.
Do you?
It was a lot of meat.
Right.
A lot of meat.
Just meat. Mm. Well, some people might love that, but also you got quite ill.
Yeah, and I think
they weren't living as long, right? So they didn't have as good diets.
So your average lifespan for a Victorian female was 48.
Fuck.
Yeah, so... Because usually it was something that would get you, so it would be, you know, childbirth or...
We're still having babies then now.
Yeah, so cholera, consumption, all of those sorts of fun things, various different bits and bobs, and there was no cure for any of that. So, you know, it was kind of, if you're going to have a baby, it was like, good luck.
Yeah, good luck, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
To be honest, I still feel a bit like that.
Is that after or
very much after the fact? Very naive on the way in. Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. And then, but on the other hand, I remember doing like a London Park foraging walk because I'm that much of a cunt. I got gifted a mushroom. I'm just putting my leg up like a weirdo. Is that all right?
No, it's fine.
I got gifted. I find that my own kitchen chair is so uncomfortable. I'm renting, mate. I got gifted a mushroom foraging walk and loved it so much that I went and did pretty much every other thing that was at that company. I think they were called the London Foraging Company or something. I'll find a link and put it in the podcast notes. That every other one that they did, and they did one in Brockwell Park. And it was in the spring. It's around this sort of time of year. Mm. And there's tons of stuff just in our parks that we can eat that back then we would have been using in cooking. Mm. But it was risky because some of it was poison. Like anything like in the same family that carrots are in, the green leaves coming up the top of a carrot pretty deadly.
Hang on, which one is it? It's potatoes that are related to deadly nightshade, isn't it?
Probably, yeah.
I think it is, yeah.
I feel like
maybe carrots are sort of in the...
It's the leaves bit that would be in it. A cowslip or something like that's very poisonous.
Oh, there's...
That looks like a carrot top. Maybe a cowslip looks like a carrot top, and that's why people are always dying
off it. The one that's got the yellow flowers that, if you've got it in animal fields, you've got to get it out straight away, because it gives you... Well, it basically poisons your liver. So... But I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, when I've kept animals before, it's like going into the field and pulling it up. But you can't pull it up with your bare hands. You've got to wear gloves because otherwise it can poison
you. Poisonous for horses. Ragwort.
Yeah, ragwort, that's the one. But that is poisonous to humans as well.
Okie dokie. Under DEFRA regulations, landowners can be penalised for allowing ragwort to spread to grazing land.
Yeah.
But horse owners should always remain vigilant and frequently check their hay.
There you go.
I've learnt that from Horse and Hound online.
Yeah, I had an ex that used to keep cattle.
Right.
And so we had about 8 cattle at one point. So, yeah, we used to have to do a lot of digging out ragwort and that.
That's
kind
amazing.
Of thing,
that's. So. I think it's so cool you've had an ex who kept cattle. I've got an ex
it wasn't
who
that
keeps...
cool.
I've got exes who keep things like Lego... Never cattle, never full massive beasts.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. I used to work in a zoo, so it's one of those things.
Did
where,
you?
Yeah, I used to work at Bristol Zoo. So one of those random things. Where...
Wicked. Bristol Zoo's amazing.
Yeah, Bristol Zoo's really nice. Yeah, it's.
I've been there in the last few years. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good little zoo.
Yeah, it's cool. Mm. The lions are quite near the start.
Yeah.
And we saved them till the end. My son was only 2, I think, when we went there. And a lion was... It was quite frightening, actually, if you're grown up and can guess. I mean, maybe it's frightening for my kid, but the lion... the mum was asleep and the daddy lion, oh my God, I'm a grown up, I don't have to say that. The female was sleeping and the male was prowling around.
Yeah.
And just prowling around. And he stopped at one point, just the other side of the glass, and just stared at my two-year-old. And I thought, fuck, now that's scary. But luckily my two-year-old's quite thick. So he just was like, wow. Oh, no, I don't mean physically. I mean intellectually. He just was like, this is so cool. And later when we were driving home, not long afterwards, I popped into the supermarket, as I'm addicted. And he was in the car with my friend and he said to her, that lion came up to my face. And she said, yeah, he did. And he went, and he spoke to me. And she said, what did he say? And he went, he said, hello, I'm a lion.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
Hello.
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And the other thing you've brought as a cure-all, bit of a gear shift there from me, is some booze.
Yeah, so
It's from the same company as the ginger and chocolate thins, Booze and Co.
It is. Can you tell I've been shopping on Amazon Prime?
Oh, is it on Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
And it's a South African old vine Kinso.
Well,
how do you say it? Sinso or
something?
Oh, I
don't know. Couldn't tell you. I'm not a wine person.
C-I-N-S-A-U-L-T.
But the fact that it says on the back that it tastes like pomegranate was the thing that intrigued me. I was like, ooh.
And is it that wine's a cure-all or that this particular wine is a cure-all?
No, not this particular wine, but a cure-all that used to be made from wine.
Right.
Which is called Vin Mariani. And in 1863, it was made by an Italian chemist, Mariani.
Right.
Who came up with a healing tonic containing red wine treated with cocoa leaves.
Hello.
Cocoa leaves.
That's a little bit of... So what, red wine and coke?
Yeah. So...
Yeah, I'm sure that would cure all in the short term.
So, ads claimed that the drink was endorsed by 8,000 doctors and was ideal for overworked men.
To be for overworked men, for fuck's sake.
Delicate women and sickly children. I know, it's
great,
isn't it?
Everything about that's perfect.
Yeah.
Overworked men. What was the women hysterical?
Delicate women.
Fragile women.
And sickly children.
And sickly little children.
That'd get them right back on their feet.
Oh, my God.
And it was... Thomas Edison was a fan. Queen Victoria was a fan.
Who wouldn't be a fan?
Exactly.
It's wine and coke.
Exactly. The Tsar of Russia.
Vino and Gack. Of course it cures everything.
Two different popes. And, so one of the popes even appeared in an advert for it and awarded it a gold medal. So there you go.
Wow.
And guess what drink it inspired?
Vimto.
No.
Lucozade.
No.
Buckfast.
No.
Is it a booze?
No.
Dr. Pepper.
No. Close.
Oh, is it... Pepsi, Coke,
no.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah. So
was Coca-Cola originally marketed as being having medicinal qualities?
Yeah, so it was marketed as a cure-all. So
not for teeth, eh?
No, not at all. So John Pemberton tasted Vin Mariani and then decided that he was going to make his own drink off the back of it. So
wow, and he invented Coca-Cola.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's where it came from. So
that's
I thought it was
incredible.
Only fitting that we drank a bit of Vin without the Mariani.
I will ask you something that I often ask people, but I think it feels like especially relevant after that. But do you think for you, anything that you've ever eaten or drunk has made you better or worse from a health thing, like in a medical way?
I don't know. There's certain things that I will take that I think make me feel better.
That's fascinating.
So, for example, chamomile tea.
Yeah.
Whenever I have bad PMS.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or how does that
bad
help
cramps.
With that?
Yeah. So it's
with
proven
pain.
As uterine muscle relaxant.
Is it?
Yeah. So I always
That's
drink chamomile
fascinating.
Tea.
Fascinating. What a lovely thing to find out at 35. I wish I'd known that for a bit longer.
Yeah, I only found out
give that a whirl.
Last year at 33.
I'll be honest, I don't love chamomile tea. I don't hate it, but it tastes a bit like soap, I think.
Yeah, it's not
it's
the nicest.
It's a bit sort of dishwashery, isn't it?
It is a bit, yeah.
It's but
kind
it's
of
not
a
offensive.
Little bit too sweet sometimes, I find.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've always just found it like somehow they've made it liquid powder.
Mm.
Like it's too this murky, flowery, dusty.
Yeah.
But if I've always thought the only thing I've ever had it recommended for was insomnia.
Hmm.
I don't know how having a relaxed uterus helps you get off to sleep.
Well, I don't know.
Have you ever been really looking forward to eating something and then it didn't happen?
I'd say that's probably quite true a lot of the time. Whenever I travel.
Really?
I always find that I'm really terrible at that first meal.
Yeah.
So when you get to somewhere and you're like, right, okay, so we just need to eat. We need to go somewhere. And then I'm like, I don't know. In my head, I'm like, right, it's got to be fairly good because otherwise it's going to taint my experience of where we are.
Right. So there's quite a lot of pressure on it.
Mm.
Where have you, where any particular travels where what you've eaten has been memorable? For good or bad? For
Spain
best or for worse?
Is always good food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you omnivorous?
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Spain is just like...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, tapas is definitely my favourite.
Is like, it?
Yeah. Just a little bit of everything is what I always want.
Perfect. Yeah, I know what you mean. Because do you like most things?
Yeah.
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 Is there anything you don't like?
You
said salmon randomly.
Salmon. Yeah, so I...
That's such a random salmon. Thing not to like.
I don't like it. It's too fishy.
Too fishy?
Not, yeah, I'm not really a big fishy fan.
Right, fine.
So, tuna's fine, cod's fine.
Right.
But yeah, any kind of like, prawns are fine, but any little seafood that can
cod
get
cod was cooked in this very kitchen earlier today, can
Ooh,
you tell? Is
no,
it offensive to your
not at
nose?
All.
Fine.
Can't smell it, but cod's fine.
And did you have a bad experience with salmon, or is it just, it's just been a general growing distaste?
Just been a general thing. Like, I think as well that when you're growing up, if you don't have much of a certain thing...
Yeah.
It means that when you're older, you just don't eat it.
Yeah.
It's like when I was growing up, this is going to sound really weird, but we weren't a fruit family.
Right.
So I'm not a fruit person.
Where did you grow up?
Just down on Hayling Island.
Right, yeah. But that's so funny. So you're just not into any fruit?
No, so my parents weren't fruit fans. So, you know, the occasional, like, satsuma or apple. And that was about it, maybe a banana. But that's about as adventurous as it got. So,
that's so funny.
Yeah, so when I was... getting older, I was like, right, okay, I'm gonna have fun fruit Friday, and I would buy a weird fruit and eat the fruit.
Wow, to try and that's so good for you to be experimental, basically.
But yeah, so like pineapple, for example, mango, that kind of thing.
Do you like them now? But you wouldn't have them all the time.
Yeah, they're kind of like, if they're served to me, I'll eat them, but I don't end up buying stuff. My other half always tells me off for buying fruit and leaving it on the sideboard,
really?
And it goes off.
Letting it go off.
Yeah.
I fall in and out. I'm very fickle with fruit. I have like a pear month where all I want is lovely pear.
Yeah.
And then I won't give a shit about pears for a year.
Yeah.
I feel like we're so spoiled having access to all the fruits from all around the world all of the time.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's a bit nuts, isn't it?
But
also,
then
I wouldn't
sometimes...
ever choose a fruity thing out unless... There was unless the caramelly chocolatey things didn't exist.
Exactly. I can't see the point in opting for the fruit on the menu when there's
a
special treat.
I feel bad because like I've never had a sorbet and been anything less than happy.
Yeah.
But I would never pick it. I'm never picking that.
No. Never ever.
Poor sorbets.
Yeah.
Of these Oscars cakes, the spring marzipan one, which I thought would be my least favourite, has been my favourite of the cakes.
I haven't tried that one yet. I'm going to do it then.
I like the raspberry vegan. Yeah. I like the raspberry vegan one, but unfortunately, that normal brownie is above and beyond. It's above. It's not offensive to vegans. I mean, the normal brownie in this instance is above and beyond.
Yeah.
Probably 99% of brownies I've ever had ever.
I once had this amazing brownie in Manchester.
Yeah.
And it had a big chunk of honeycomb on the top.
Oh my God.
And when you bit into it, it was almost liquid. It was incredible. So good. Shit. I can't remember the name of the place. But yeah. Ah, no, it just choked it on the floor.
Just get a new bit. Get a new bit. Yeah. So Spain is always good for food.
Mm.
Have you ever been travelling and eaten anything like weird or frightening or just disappointing?
Had a really bad case of food poisoning in Prague.
Oh no, do you know what it was?
I do know exactly what it was. I can pinpoint it.
Really? Because it tasted weird. What was it?
It wasn't because it tasted weird. It was me and my other half had eaten the same thing throughout the whole of the day.
Right.
And the one thing I had different was we went into the Hard Rock Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I ever do anything like that on holiday, but we were looking for a hot
No
chocolate.
Judgment here, mate.
But yeah, we always usually stay clear of them. But yeah, and so we went in there thinking that would be fine.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a hot chocolate on the menu. And so he went for the nearest thing, which was a chocolate milkshake with bacon on top. I was in the toilet at this point.
What?
So when I came back, he said, I've ordered you a chocolate milkshake.
With bacon on top. What the fuck?
And so you can imagine in the Hard Rock Cafe, this bacon sitting on the side somewhere, just being in like one of those little pots where they have like the limes and stuff.
Oh,
like,
gross.
And them just putting that on the top after they'd made it. And
what did it taste like?
It was fine. Like, I didn't even notice. So I think because bacon's so salty, it covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I ate it, and then about 2 hours later, all hell broke loose.
Oh my God!
Loose being the operative term.
I do not ever want bacon and chocolate together. Even if there's nothing wrong with either of them.
See, I've had bacon and chocolate together before that, and it was fine, but I don't think I'd touch it now. Not as an option.
I feel, a bit annoyed at the thought. My emotional reaction.
I love that you're offended by it. That's amazing.
Yeah, like, offended.
You're like, what are you doing?
Like, fuck off. Who's doing that? I heard of, like, bacon ice cream, and I think, yeah, I see where you're going with it, because I like... I think sweet and salty go well together, and I think I can imagine perhaps cooked pork and cream go together well. So don't think that's that, but I'm almost angry about the idea of chocolate and bacon together.
Yeah, don't blame you. It
a bacon
a good one.
Covered. Oh, I've had to almost retch.
That's not good.
What's the earliest thing you remember eating apart from milks?
Oh, my first ever memory.
Yeah, eating one.
Yeah, so like my literal first ever memory
was
eating something. Yeah, so I remember being in like our first ever house that we lived in, and I only lived there for about a year, I think.
Right.
And I remember kind of hanging around at the bottom of the stairs, going into the living room, walking up to the TV, and on the top of the TV was one of those little, and I don't know if you remember these from your childhood, but those little strips of sweets that were shaped as bricks.
Mm.
And they were in little, it was almost like refreshers.
Shaped as bricks?
Yeah.
Do you mean just oblong?
No, so they were actual shaped as bricks.
Oh, I know what
like
you mean.
Little
I know.
Building blocks.
Oh, I've never had one of those.
Because I remember just going up to the TV and there was one of those on the TV and putting it in my mouth and it was yellow.
Amazing.
And I remember it so clearly and I can still remember the taste of it.
What did it taste of?
Just sherbet.
Oh, yes.
But slightly dusty.
Dusty sherbet, I think it had been resting there for a bit.
Yeah, for a while. I assume my sister must have put it there.
And did you already say, sorry, how old do you think you probably were?
I think I must have been about maybe one. Like maybe one and a half.
That's amazing to remember something that early.
Yeah, I remember. Like, that's the only... that's literally the first memory. And then I can't really remember anything until about three.
foods that you would eat when you're on a budget and or would think to recommend as like really great cheap things that you can make if you're not rolling in it?
Super cheap stuff. Well, I had a small period of my life, which is about a year and a half, where I had like hardly any money whatsoever. Yeah. I was working full time, but no money whatsoever. Because I was living in a flat on my own, so everything just kind of went on rent and then utilities, and then it's like, what have you got left over? And so I used to buy a huge bag of pasta and then just have that with like herbs and stuff on top of it.
Oh, it's so bad.
And or
you just dried herbs.
Yeah. And then where I worked at the zoo as well, occasionally you'd like steal a little bit of food out of the kitchen.
Fair enough.
You'd be like, right, I'm gonna have this pepper. Sorry, hippos.
Oh my god, yes, it meant that you were working with animals that were getting more fresh fruit and veg than you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's I'm just gonna take this home before it goes off. So yeah, but our fridge at work, we used to kind of also have things like defrosting mice and rats and stuff in there, so you'd be like, right, I hope I take this home and it doesn't kill me, it'll be fine.
Of course you've got to feed like snakes sorts of crazy bastards,
but yeah, so I used to do that. So I used to be on a really super tight budget for that, but yeah, I think there's stuff that you can do though, like you can make like a veggie soup is always good, like that's always a good little fail safe.
Goes a long way, doesn't it, like a root veg soup.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I think that I have a concern that those soup packs that you can buy, every supermarket's sort of cashed in on that, people's need for a quick fix. And so they do like a plastic wrapped little tray of the content, the potential contents of the soup, which I suppose makes life easier if you don't know where to start. But ultimately, that is plastic you don't need. And it's always more expensive than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make any sense. If you just bought a swede and a carrot and a turnip, you'd probably be spending around a quid.
Yeah, and I think if you go to the greengrocers as well, it's so much cheaper.
Is it?
Yeah, and quite often. Well, because they don't have too much stuff that they're like pre-wrapping or anything like that, and they're not paying for a huge like space to rent, it's not quite so bad. And they just have, like, you know, in a supermarket, there's no kind of haggling to be done there. Whereas if you pick up a potato that's slightly manky in greengrocers, you can say, oh, can I just have that one?
We haven't got a greengrocers in Ladywell. We've got a really posh deli, which is lovely, but it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll get stuff in there because I'm glad it exists, and I understand why it has to be expensive.
Yeah.
But it's infuriating that it's expensive.
But Asda's do like their wonky veg box now.
Do they?
That's $3.95 though. Oh, and it's still quite a lot too expensive for what's in there. It's usually a couple of like crappy carrots and like a slightly gone off cauliflower for like $3.95. It's like,
there's a difference between wonky and off.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't think it's a good thing. But I think budgeting, like, it can just be really, like, food for me is a complete joy.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you don't have money to eat, it's really sad, and it's like you just end up being like, great, I'm gonna go home and eat dry pasta again. Yay.
Well, it's not it's a really emotional thing, isn't it? It feels like one of our most basic, you know, you need to feel like you can feed yourself. And then it gets you in the hardest part when you feel like you can't do that. I think I can't imagine anything worse, really.
No.
I do remember, and this is not a comparison to people who are living on the line, and there are so many people, and there's more people all the time, the way things are going at the moment, politically. But as a student, I just remember running out of overdraft and having enough money left to get some food or get some fags, and got some fags and thought,
that's what I would
have done. I bought them, 18, you know, in halls. And as I bought them, thinking, you're fucking this up.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make some better choices. But that wasn't real poverty. It was a waiting game to the next paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's always something that you can find, isn't there? I think now as well, I think students are so sort of ready and prepped for it as well, because they know that it's going to be no money. And I
wasn't paying anywhere near as much fees either. I think on like $3,000 a year when I did it, and now it's triple that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
It's crazy.
And I'm still sitting on that entire debt.
Yeah.
Virtually. I mean, every now and again I take a chunk off, but
yeah, me too.
terrifying.
Yeah.
To think that you're going in, you almost can't. I don't think I don't let myself think about my student debt.
Mm.
It's just too huge a thing to contemplate.
No, exactly.
It's, and if like, it was three times as big.
Yeah. It's terrifying, isn't it?
It's obscene.
Yeah.
And I've wasted my degree. Delicious. Tell me your other business.
Yes, yeah, so we've got some bits and bobs that I wanted to talk to you about. So some different cure-alls.
Oh, yes.
So I didn't know whether you wanted to hear about them.
I do, yes, please.
So do you want to know what the Elizabethan cure for warts is?
No.
So you would get a mouse.
Oh, God.
You would cut the mouse in half.
Oh, God.
And apply it to the offending spot.
Fucking hell.
But
who wouldn't rather have a wart?
I know,
and a
exactly.
dead mouse getting rubbed on the bloody but knuckle.
The Elizabethans Ugh. Also used to eat mice as well. So they
Fucking
used to fry
pervert.
Them or bake them in pies. Oh. I assume that they must have eaten them whole.
Oh, God!
You can't really pick one apart, can you?
No.
You should see Jess's face right now. It's a picture.
Who's eating a mouse? A little mouse.
I know, but I guess
I'm scared of mice. I'm scared of mice. Is the problem?
Yeah, but
I'm really not into rodents.
Pretty free and easy food source, though,
and it's protein, right? Come the apocalypse, I might as well get my bloody mouth around a mouse.
But they used to use them for treating whooping cough, measles, smallpox, and bedwetting.
What? Just rubbing mouse corpses onto your?
Yeah.
How do you cure bedwetting with that?
I don't know. Just eat them, I guess.
Eat a mouse?
Yeah.
Yeah, you won't be pissing yourself at night because you're too busy shitting yourself about what breakfast's going to be.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Do you want to know what a clister is?
I better find out.
It's a coffee-scented enema.
Is an enema something you squirt up your dark side?
Yeah.
And then it's like a colonic irrigation, like pumps all your poop out.
Yeah, so basically it was fashionable from the 17th through to the 19th century.
You can still get a coffee enema now.
Can you?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that's like an LA thing.
Oh, it must be. But yeah, apparently it was meant to treat a variety of various different things. Constipation being one of them, which I can see makes sense. But a typical clister might contain warm water mixed with salt, baking soda or soap. Some doctors added coffee, bran, herbs, honey or chamomile. So again, that thing with the uterine relaxing, maybe it kind of might work around that area as well.
Oh, God. Wow. Wowee.
And apparently during his time on the throne, Louis the, I can never work this out, 10th, 15th, 16th of France. That's how I have to do it.
I like that out loud.
Is said to have had more than 2,000 enemas.
Oh my days. I think he liked it. Do you think he liked it?
I think he must have liked it.
I think he liked having his bum fiddled with.
Yeah, exactly. Mouldy bread. So, mouldy bread has been used to disinfect cuts as far back as ancient Egypt.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. But obviously that makes sense because penicillin.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it wasn't actually developed as a proper medicine until Louis Pasteur. But
well, it wasn't the bread that was helping, it was the mould.
No, it was the mould. So yeah, so people used to eat them as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose, you're eating the penicillin.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, but I don't know whether they would do it in a course in the way that we
Can you, just make this loaf last for 21 days.
Yeah.
One nibble at 3 p.m.
Yeah, exactly.
every day.
Not drink them with alcohol. But apparently that whole drinking it with alcohol thing...
That's a load of shit, apart from two antibiotics. Yeah, doctor told me that. Student doctor told me that. I think it's one of those things that professors love telling students quite early on in medical school, because it's one of those things that can flash about.
Yeah.
And sound. There are a couple
that
don't work, but it's just...
I think they tell you that to make sure that you take them, though.
Yeah. I think it's just to make you behave, just be a bit better to yourself, generally.
Yeah, exactly.
You are going to... You sleep less well if you're on the lash. Mm. There's, you know, all the stuff that makes you get well anyway.
Yeah.
If you're not taking care of yourself because you're out on a razzle every night.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is annoying for people who are taking their licking their mouldy bread and trying to drink their wine cure all at the same time. Their wine and gack.
Snake oil. So snake oil, like, you know how people refer to like quack medical treatments as snake oil. Apparently snake oil was an actual thing. So for centuries, oil from the Chinese water snake was an actual treatment used in traditional Chinese medicine to relieve joint pain. And in fact, they still use it today.
So it's probably like cod liver oil.
Yeah. It says that it has got omega-3 in it, which is probably what causes the anti-inflammatory. But, okay. Yeah, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, when people still refer to snake oil. Apparently it works.
Fascinating. So,
there you go.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, and do you want to know about crystal meth?
Yeah.
So, who do you guess was on crystal meth throughout history? Just one person in particular, which would explain a lot.
Napoleon?
No.
Marquis de Sade?
No.
Henry VIII?
No.
Elizabeth I?
No. Think later.
Boudicca?
No. Later.
Later.
Much, much later.
Oh, God. Hitler. Hitler!
So Hitler used to have crystal meth injected into his buttocks. And as one observer remarked, the injections helped keep Hitler fresh, alert, active, and immediately ready for the day.
Wow.
And apparently it used to help to make him stay awake long hours into the night. So there you go.
Oh, my God. Straight into the arse cheek.
Yep, straight into the arse cheek.
Hi, yeah, caramba.
So he used to then have a go at troops for wanting to retreat because he was like, no, I'm fine. I can keep going.
Yeah.
And yeah, no wonder because you're on crystal meth.
Wow. That is so fascinating.
But it's crazy, isn't it? I didn't know that. And I was like, oh, I wonder what is what was used as a cure-all back then. And crystal meth. So there you go.
It did
have vitamins in it as well. So they used to lace it with vitamins as well. So it could have been the vitamins, you know.
It could have been, absolutely. Been a really strong... I'm sure the crystal meth didn't contribute to his fascism at all. It was just the vitamins.
No, not at all.
My God.
And then, did you want to find out what your humour is?
Oh, yeah, let's do my four humours.
Okay, so, can you remember your four humours from school?
I don't think I did them at school, but I've done stuff about this for something else, and I can't remember what it was now, but I know it's your sanguine, is that right?
Yeah.
Your spit, your blood, your water.
Yeah.
And your
so it
poo?
Is yellow bile, black bile, phlegm, and blood.
Yeah.
So those coordinate with fire, earth, water, and air. So fire is yellow bile, earth is black bile, water is phlegm, air is blood. I must say, I'm reading all of this.
Yeah, right.
So those end up relating back to your character. So you would go and see your doctor, and then your doctor would assess your character and then assign you.
And then sometimes they bloodlet if you were sanguine. That's where that comes from, isn't
so,
it? To be like a bit, they think you're a bit too, had too much blood.
Yeah, so sanguine, which is a cheery person of reddish complexion, vigorous, and tends to put on weight. So for that, you would eat a meal of pork with sweet and sour sauce.
Oh my God.
Because that relates back to the foods that they thought went with those humours.
Oh my God.
A choleric person, which is an angry or bad-tempered person, who has a yellow complexion, a dry and nervous body. So you would serve them like a strong meat, so like a beef or a venison.
Oh, right, to red them up a bit.
Yeah, yeah. And then atrabiliary, which is melancholy. So that person would be rather thin. They'd have a grey complexion. So you'd serve them fish with sweet sauce.
Ooh.
So like a sugary fish.
Yeah.
And then a lymphatic, lazy person is thin and limp with a pale complexion. So you would serve them a soup with raw vegetables.
Right.
So, yeah. So
soup with raw vegetables not going to help with the thinness, is
no,
it?
No,
so
exactly.
Much?
But, yeah, which one do you think you are? I don't know which one I am.
I'm confident I'm sanguine.
I think I'm sanguine as well,
yeah, but I don't really want sweet and sour pork.
No. No, you could have the sweet and sour sauce, I guess.
I suppose.
Don't know what else there is.
I find
that
it a bit... scared of the glowingness these days.
I know, but it's crazy though that they had sweet and sour back in medieval times. You wouldn't think that they would. Like,
no.
I really wouldn't have thought that.
I wonder what they meant by it. They probably don't mean the same like nuclear looking sauce that you get your fried balls in
thing.
Now.
But yeah, I thought that was quite interesting though.
I love it. That's amazing.
I've got stuff about Queen Victoria if you want to go into that.
Tell me a bit, one quick thing about Queen Victoria.
Okay. So she used to eat, basically when she was little, they said to her that she was too fat for her age.
What?
So when she was little, they put her on a diet of just bread and milk. And so she just had bread and milk. And she swore that when she grew up, she was never going to let that happen ever again. And she would eat mutton every day. And she did.
Yay!
So yeah, so when she was old enough and in power enough to be able to state what her...
Fuck.
What her diet would be, she would have a full breakfast every day, so porridge, fish, etc., etc., and then she would have a complete full lunch as well, which would usually be a roast, and then a full dinner as well, and then like snacks in between, so afternoon teas and that kind of
thing. Did she have gout and stuff?
Yeah, so she used to have all sorts of kind of related
illnesses. Oh no! So it went too far the other way.
Yeah.
I think bread and milk is not like the worst kind of torture, but you're like, no, she needed more vitamins than that and minerals.
Can't feed her like a hedgehog.
Poor queen.
Poor queenie. But yeah, so she used to have all sorts of stuff.
Fascinating stuff.
But also, they think that eating disorders came around in the Victorian times because the women were so... confined to their outfits and things that wouldn't be able to eat very much, and the only thing that they really had control of was their diets, because everything else was controlled for them.
Corset time.
So yeah, you would have been strapped into your corset in the morning.
I wore a corset as a historical figure on an acting job for a bit, and I liked what it did to my tits, but it hurt me in the kidneys.
Yeah, I can imagine, because everything gets squished into that area, doesn't
horrific.
It?
Horrific.
Yeah.
Horrific at lunchtime. Can't exactly that. I just unpicked it.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't blame you.
But they were eating less horrible times.
Yeah, but it's crazy.
God, that's so interesting. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
A prison of terrible serial killers have planned an escape from jail by digging a hole, and the hole will pop up in the office of a small but brilliant and vitally important charity. Then immediately we recognise that they'll have to take out all the amazing charity people. Weirdly, only you can stop it. But to do it, you have to bounce on a pogo stick over their tunnel for 24 hours until it caves in, without even stopping once for a banana. It sounds impossible, but you do it! Your prize is the adulation of all humanity forevermore, and the feast of your dreams. I'd like to know what you're eating, what you're drinking, who with, and where.
Ooh, what would I have? Do you want three courses?
No, you can do what you like.
Okay. I think I would have the best buffet table you've ever seen.
Lush.
So I would have like lots of really nice bread. So like rosemary and salt kind of focaccia.
Yes.
To start with, like with that's slightly warm with some really soft butter on it.
Yes.
Oh, I'd have some of that. And then I'd have some olives, I think. And lots of cheeses and meats. And maybe some of those little Scotch eggs as well. Like ones with the little scrambled egg inside.
That's called a picnic egg. That's not a Scotch egg.
Yeah, I'd have one of those.
Great.
Well, maybe several of those.
Several of those.
So is
do you dip them in anything?
No, I don't actually.
Okay.
I like a pork pie as well.
Great. Warm or cold?
I think I'd probably go cold.
Okie dokie. Yeah. Very nice. Cheese straws. Great. No one said that before.
Yeah, so I think I'd probably have that, and then after all of that, I'd probably want an actual main. So I'm guessing the amount of food that you consume is not an issue here.
No. You can have as many tummies as you need.
So I think probably for my main, I had this amazing thing in Portugal once, and it was like a flattened piece of chicken that was breaded, and then it had melted cheese on top, and it was like a pizzery type thing on top.
Where did you say you had this?
In Portugal.
Pizza on top of that.
Yeah, so it was like it didn't have the bread on it, so it was just the cheese and tomato, and it had lots of olives underneath the cheese. And
like it was an escalope, like,
yeah, so like it was a like topped escalope, but it was like topped.
And oh my god, that sounds fucking lush.
With like,
oh my god, that sounds so good.
With some nice sweet potato fries, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then for pudding, what would I have? Oh, I like a cheese board, but
get
I
feel like cheese
I've, already,
board,
I've already had the cheese and meat, though, so it's probably going to be some of
someone having a second round of cheeses, though, Nikki.
It could definitely happen.
Yeah.
yeah, so maybe another cheese board. that I can't have cheesecake then, can I?
Yes, have everything.
So yeah, maybe a cheesecake then.
Yes,
for
yes.
Pudding. I'm trying to think of anything else that I've had that's been amazing for pudding. I once had a cake from Chocky Wocky Doodah for my birthday.
Say it again.
Chocky Wocky Doodah.
Chocky Wocky Doodah.
Have you never heard of Chocky
Wocky
Doodah?
Never heard of it, mate.
It's a little... There's a couple of shops in Brighton, I think, and they've got a cafe. But basically all they do is chocolate. And right. They do these amazing, like, sculpted cakes. And they do, like, solid chocolate skulls and things like that.
It's
so cool, and their cakes are like from like the floor up to like a metre and a half, so they're crazy stuff. But yeah, maybe just one whole one of those to finish.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Who are you having there?
So I'd have my other half.
Yeah.
And then probably some weird people from history. I reckon. So I would probably have John Ellis, who was a hangman in the Victorian time, because he was a very interesting character. He basically really wanted to be a hangman. He decided one day that he saw in the paper that somebody was getting hanged, and he was like, right, that's a job for me. I'm going to stop working in this factory, and I'm going to apply to be a hangman. So he applied, and it took a couple of years before he got the job, and then he had to be an apprentice. And then after that, he started doing a few bits and bobs, and then eventually they gave him the position, and he was the chief hangman. And then he went through, I can't remember how many people he executed, but hundreds.
Whoa.
And then towards the end, funnily enough, it started to get to him, and he tried to quit, and they wouldn't let him quit. And so he tried to shoot himself in the head, but he didn't do a very good job of it.
No.
And then he was fine after that, and then he did like some really weird theatre stuff and took himself to the stage and executed people on stage, but not actual people.
At the start of why you were saying you wanted him there, I was thinking, oh my fucking god, what? But now I understand, yes, that is an interesting man.
Yeah, and then eventually, unfortunately, he did end up successfully taking his own life. But yeah, it was a very strange, interesting man.
Okay.
It's just like, I'd want to know
get the ins and outs of that.
Yeah, all behind.
Getting chatting over a bit of pork pie, Nikki.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
and I think probably I would also have all of Jack the Ripper's victims.
Okay, get the truth out of them.
Yeah, because I think it's I went to an evening the other evening with the author of a new book called Hallie Rubenhold, and she's just told all the stories of the five victims.
Oh, wow.
Because they're always
overlooked,
completely ignored. And I think what's really important for me when I do my storytelling is that I really try and find out about the victims, because I think so often it's the crime that happened to them, and it's that's not okay. And I think so it's got to be kind of, you know, sort of
brilliant,
more of the victim story. But yeah, I would like to know more about them, because I think a lot of things that are said about them aren't true as well.
Lot
of them, you know, they're called working girls, but I don't think a lot of them were. A lot of them, you know, they all had one unfortunate thing in common, which is that they were all alcoholics. But
Probably wasn't around then.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was the gin craze, so everybody was on gin.
Bit like last summer.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank
this has been
you
fantastic.
So much. It's been lovely.
Blooming meant those thank yous. Thank you again, Nikki Drews. She's amazing. If you're interested in her podcast, and who wouldn't be, look it up. It's called Macabre London, and she's on all the socials as Macabre London as well. It's fascinating stuff. It's obviously not as food focused. It's more just like death and victims focused. But it's a splendid podcast. Please do check it out. You can check us out as well. We're on all the social medias at The Hoovering Pod. We have a life of our own, or you can follow me on there at Jessica Foster Q. Got any questions or anything, tap me up. Tell everyone you've ever met about the podcast, please, to their faces and online. Rate, review, subscribe. If you want to come to any of the live shows and any of my stand-up shows, everything's listed on my podcast, jessicafosterq.com. I'm previewing my new show, Hench, everywhere, and I'm about to take that up to the Edinburgh Festival in August. Be lovely to see you at anything stand-up or Hoovering Live related. I'm on Patreon. That's patreon.com/thehooveringpod. If you've got a spare few bucks a month you want to swap for prezzies, and don't forget to vote for Hoovering in the Listener's Choice Award of the British Podcast Awards. Go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Hoovering was produced by Emma Corsham. Thank you to Acast for hosting it. The music was by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy Hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.